From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up,
Donald Trump proves to be the key topic during this week's debates for Arkansas's U.S. House and Senate races.
Governor Hutchinson weighs in on the race for president in advance of a trip to China.
The Arkansas Supreme Court shakes up what ballot issues will be counted next month, tossing out tort reform and casinos, but leaving in a medical marijuana proposal.
And Central Arkansas watches as a 93-year-old bridge, deemed to be structurally deficient, puts up a fight in being torn down. More on the demolition of the Broadway Bridge is just ahead. For the week ending Friday, October 14th, 2016, this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Chris Hickey.
That's just ahead. So, Chris, it's now 25 days until Election Day, and it's amazing to think that it was only 1 week ago today that we had the comments from Donald Trump on a hot mic. I keep hearing that phrase used over and over, using pretty vulgar terms to talk about women and making comments about his willingness to approach women, kiss women, grope women, things that many, including Governor Asa Hutchinson, said he would consider sexual assault. But it has been fascinating watching as party leaders decide how to respond to this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's certainly dominated the headlines of the past week. These comments from 2005 kind of captured behind the scenes of this Access Hollywood shoot uncovered by the Washington Post. Pretty much every major political speech, every reporter's question about from, you know, to every political leader, almost probably across the country, especially on the Republican side, has had to contend with this. And, you know, we had our AETN debates this week, the statewide debates for Congress and, you know, the House and Senate, one of which you moderated, of course, Michael, and our Governor Asa Hutchinson, who in the past few months has been largely critical, or at least lukewarm to the idea of a Donald Trump presidency, going back all the way to the spring during the primary when, you know, he appeared on NPR talking with Robert Siegel of All Things Considered in a couple of appearances, calling Trump's words at the time frightening and calling into question his plans to build a wall and have Mexico pay for it and all these things and disagreeing on the issues of trade. But Governor Asa Hutchinson is still behind Trump, and we got confirmation of that this week. Every time Trump makes controversial comments, reporters in Arkansas ask him, Governor Asa Hutchinson, about it. He's been, you know, saying the constant refrain is that, well, a Trump presidency would be better than a Hillary Clinton presidency, mainly because Republican leaders across the country can influence Trump in terms of policy and would be more accessible. And, you know, of course, Republicans are often very, you know, critical of, you know, Hillary Clinton's handling of classified information or email scandal and things like that.
Yeah. Well, we'll play a comment from the governor here in just a moment, but this was from the candidates for Senate. And this, by the way, was the only debate in which all three candidates for the seat currently held by a Republican incumbent, John Bozeman. This is the only debate that is being held this season. Connor Eldridge has kind of made a big show of driving around in an old truck with a pair of podiums on the back, challenging Bozeman to have a series of debates. But this was their one time to meet up and debate the issues before an audience. And as you said, Chris, yes, the issue of Donald Trump dominated the evening. And here is, I took part in the debate and asked, I was in this question. It was directed at Senator Bozeman. And first thing I asked was about his response on Donald Trump.
Our first question tonight comes from Michael Hiblin, and it goes first to Mr. Bozeman. Senator Bozeman, you've called Donald Trump's comments about women out of line. I think suggested if he had said it about your wife or daughters, you would punch him.
More than out of line.
But you haven't withdrawn your support. And I understand going along with your party's nominee for policies and judicial appointments and the like. But given everything that Donald Trump has said during this campaign, do you think he has the temperament to serve as commander-in-chief?
No, I think we're in a situation where we have two very flawed candidates. But it is the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Both of these were nominated by their parties. And as we go forward, the things that I have to look at is the total package. My concern is the Supreme Court, as you mentioned. I've got a little granddaughter that's sitting out here now. She's 4 years old. We're talking about 25, 30-year terms. This will affect her till she's 25 years old. So it really is very, very important. Donald Trump has come forward and said that he would take and nominate people. In fact, he's provided a list of people that will look at the Constitution, try and interpret the law as the writers of the Constitution or the writers of the legislation intended, and act appropriately. It was interesting the other night when Hillary did her thing and they asked her about who she would choose. She made references to she wanted people that got along with others and all this kind of stuff. She never mentioned the Constitution. She never mentioned the law. What she wants to do is put people in that will, again, interpret things as they feel like they should be, and disregarding the law, making new law. The other thing is that Hillary Clinton is running on a third term of replacing President Obama. She's made no bones about that. I think most of our listeners out there that are listening understand that that simply is unacceptable. This country cannot take another third term of President Obama and all of the policies that he's put in place. So for those reasons, I'm supporting Mr. Trump and voting for him.
And you've seen elsewhere around the country, I think at this point, 16 Republican senators have come out and said they will not vote for Donald Trump. But there, Senator Bozeman largely mentioning the U.S. Supreme Court and the vacancy there that will have to be filled. Connor Eldridge definitely came out on the attack on this issue.
Mr. Trump does not have the temperament to serve. That has been made abundantly clear throughout this race. It comes back to me to what I heard from a fishing guide on the White River in North Arkansas. And he said, I voted for both parties from time to time. He said, but I'm not going to vote for a guy that I can't trust with a foreign policy that my son who's in the military has to live by. And I think that's what where the rubber meets the road on this one for me. We should not give Donald Trump an open mic with American foreign policy. We should not give him the nuclear codes. He has shown time and again that should not happen. I'm in this race because I want to put country over party. And I would again call on Senator Bozeman to withdraw his support for Trump. He should do that. 16 other Republican senators have done that. 160 Republicans. I heard the other day President Bush's Secretary of Commerce who said, I'm a Republican, I can't do that, it's not the right thing for the country. I'm running to put the country first. I'm running to put party aside. There are things I agree and disagree with both presidential candidates, and whoever is elected, we need a strong U.S. Senator from Arkansas to lead and to represent our interests. And whoever's in the White House, I will work with them or I will fight them if it's the right thing to do for this state and this country. I care about my kids in this too. And I think we can surely on this stage all agree that this is really for all of us a lot about our kids.
And also taking part in these debates this week on AETN, every race had a Libertarian candidate. It was interesting, Chris, that a lot of races for House seats, the 1st District, the 4th District, and the 1st District too. The 2nd District was the only House race where you actually had a Democrat in there. Otherwise, it was Republicans against Libertarians.
Yeah, you wonder what it says about the state of the Democratic Party in Arkansas. Maybe they're gearing up for a future election. Maybe they're trying to focus on more local races. But yeah, you know, you had Diane Curry as the lone Democrat who's running for the second district seat against the incumbent French Hill. You know, also in that race, you have a Libertarian. But yeah, it is interesting to hear the or to see, you know, the Libertarians becoming the sometimes in some cases the lone opposition party. Certainly, they appeal to many conservative leaning folks. I think maybe a lot of their you know in a lot of you know a lot of policy positions are you know contrarian to Republicans. Ideology, but some are not, you know, and it's an interesting cross-section for sure. But yeah, very little, you know, very little representation of candidates from the left-leaning side of the spectrum. Even 2 years ago in the general election, I mean, we had Green Party candidates.
Yeah, you had four candidates that were in these AETN debates.
Yeah, yeah, for governor and for the U.S. Senate race. So, and, you know, the Green Party has kind of come faltered a little bit and, you know, is going through a kind of a downturn. They didn't get enough signatures to get all their candidates on the ballot, although the Green Party presidential candidate will be on the ballot in Arkansas.
Well, let's hear the Libertarian Party candidate, Frank Gilbert, for U.S. Senate. This was his response to what had been said at this point by Senator Bozeman and Connor Eldridge.
Donald Trump is an embarrassment to the Republican Party. He's an embarrassment to the American people. To think that our allies across the world and our enemies as well see what he is saying and doing in this country makes us look like a third world banana republic, and I hate that. The senator's correct, though. They are both flawed candidates. Hillary's baggage is well known in this state, probably better here than anywhere else in the world. And so a lot of us know that she is not fit to be president either. We are fortunate that the Libertarian Party has nominated two former governors. Gary Johnson, former New Mexico governor, served as a Republican in a Democrat state, a legislature that was in the opposition to him. William Weld, a two-term governor of Massachusetts, who again served in a very blue state, no, a very red state, as a blue governor, and both of those gentlemen were reelected after serving their first term. They are men of good character, of competence, and of a steady nature that we need right now. I would encourage every American and every Arkansan to consider Gary Johnson as a viable alternative to the two poor candidates that the old parties have provided us.
So it will be interesting to see this election day, whether what kind of turnout Gary Johnson does get from people in the state. There is the fear that Donald Trump will turn off so many voters that it will have a dramatic down ballot impact, probably not in Arkansas, but in other states around the country. That's why you've seen so much distance between candidates not wanting to be associated with Donald Trump or very vocal against him.
Yeah, it's impossible to say at this point, you know, how it will affect down ballot races. I, you know, all the polls and everything don't really break that down, as you know, from what I've seen. But I thought it was interesting in some of their opening comments that you played there, the candidates, how, you know, John Bozeman seemed to, you know, certainly criticize Donald Trump, but, you know, went very quickly into criticism of Hillary Clinton. And then you heard with, you know, and went at length for, you know, reasons for why to not vote for Hillary Clinton. And also, you know, you heard Frank Gilbert there also criticize both major party candidates. But I didn't really hear from what you played anyways. Connor Eldridge, he's certainly hammering home this fact that Donald Trump is unqualified, unfit temperamentally. But I didn't really hear, you know, an especially strong defense of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and there really wasn't.
And this, you know, and just I listened to most of the debate, I think, on the radio, and just, you know, and this has been kind of a key, point of campaigning for Eldridge, is that he's trying to cast himself as this independent candidate more so than a Democratic or left-leaning one. I remember hearing in the debate how he talked about, he disagrees with both parties, you know, or whatever. But at the same time, there's some kind of uncertain territory in terms of dealing with, you know, his party's presidential candidate, even though she's from Arkansas or lived in Arkansas for a time. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not going to bring you any cuts from the House races. The Senate race is definitely the one that is looking like the biggest challenge, even though Bozeman has a safe lead, and it's looking unlikely that Connor Eldridge will pull out any kind of a surprise win there.
Yeah, and Bozeman's definitely outraised Connor Eldridge in terms of campaign fundraising. Neither candidate really, though, has a lot of name recognition. I remember just, you know, from some talk business, Hendricks College polls from a few months ago. It's one of those races that, you know, we hear about Senate races across the country. You know, will the Senate go to the Democrats this election? Because of the Donald Trump factor, mostly, you know, like you're saying, in down ballot races, but it appears like it's probably not going to be the case here.
Yeah. And last comment we'll play here regarding Donald Trump. We mentioned Governor Hutchinson speaking about this on Thursday, and his comments really were very similar to what was said by Bozeman. Sounds kind of like there are some talking points that kind of being put together for why people in Arkansas Republican leadership should continue to support Donald Trump through all this.
We do have two candidates that are both flawed, and the American public just has to evaluate it. My evaluation is on the big picture items of where our economy goes, where we are in fighting ISIS, in terms of the Supreme Court.
And we're just a few days away from the third and final debate scheduled for the presidential race. Governor Hutchinson will be on an economic development trip going to China when that is being broadcast. Of course, Hutchinson had originally backed the former governor Mike Huckabee in the primary, then Marco Rubio back when he made the comments about Donald Trump being a huge concern. This is going to be the visit that the governor is taking. It's a $45,000 visit to go to five cities in 6 days. He'll be speaking and meeting with Chinese firms who perhaps might be interested in locating in Arkansas, and also hoping to get some of China to import Arkansas agricultural goods, rice in particular there. So the governor's second trip to China now. But on the election topic, Chris, big news on Thursday, the Arkansas Supreme Court issuing rulings concerning three constitutional amendments that were going to be going to voters.
Yeah, that's right. Constitutional amendments on legalizing medical marijuana, as well as a measure that would allow three casinos to operate in three counties in Arkansas, and one that would allow the legislature to set a cap on awards in medical lawsuits. And that's kind of a complicated one we'll get into a little later. But first, the medical marijuana one, they upheld this proposal for the constitutional amendment, the Arkansas Medical Marijuana Amendment of 2016. This is the proposal sponsored by lawyer David Couch. It had been challenged by a group about question committee formed by the state attorney general, Greg Bledsoe. And their main challenge in the Supreme Court, they said that the ballot title had failed to inform voters that people who are patients taking medical marijuana could not be disciplined for marijuana use at their workplace, or not while they're at work using marijuana, but use in general. It's just kind of an odd argument for an opposition committee to make to protect, you know, the workers for, or to inform voters that, you know, there should be protections for workers who are patients of medical marijuana use. But the ballot title, or the Supreme Court ruled that, well, you know, the ballot title did not necessarily need to say that. It was already written into the language of the law. Actually, both proposals on medical marijuana include language that prevents discrimination, employer discrimination on workers who are also medical marijuana patients.
And so, we're expecting we might get a ruling possibly even after our podcast is recorded, maybe today on Friday, concerning the other medical marijuana proposal, that one led by Melissa Foltz.
Yeah, who's also a state representative candidate. That is the Arkansas Medical Cannabis Act. And the challenge to that one, it was a different sort of challenge. It was by the same group, but they were challenging the validity of the signatures in that. So we're still awaiting a decision. But as far as we know now, at least one medical marijuana proposal will be on the ballot.
And it's worth noting, too, that she, when they have had events, has repeatedly called on David Couch to halt his effort because she has suggested having both on the ballot will confuse voters and both will fail.
Yeah, and it was interesting in the article in the Democrat Gazette this morning talking about this, she was quoted as saying, well, you know, there's some national, you know, pro-marijuana groups that had been, you know, funding the campaign, their campaign, and that they had, like, recently pulled funding because they weren't there. They thought it was too risky because they saw that two competing measures were going to be on the ballot, which is an interesting case. However, at the same time, the David Couch proposal, the amendment, which does not allow people to grow their own medical marijuana in their homes if they're living too far away from a dispensary or other such, you know, distribution source, does pull a lot better with Arkansas voters. At least we've seen that in, you know, the recent Talk Business Hendricks College polls. It seems like people are more willing to support that one. Although even in those polls, from what I recall, you know, there's a sizable percentage of undecided voters, but still the people who are for the medical marijuana amendment was below 50%. Now, at the same time, we should mention, you know, back in 2012, for instance, there was also, you know, a medical marijuana proposal on the ballot, just barely lost, you know, it was like 49% to 51% against, so.
And you've had more states that continue kind of signing off on medical marijuana, almost half of the states now.
Yeah, exactly half, actually. It's 25 states, as well as District of Columbia, as well as Puerto Rico and Guam have medical marijuana statutes.
So more than half. The two that were knocked down on the tort reform, the proposal to limit damage awards in medical liability cases.
Yeah. Okay. So this one, this was sponsored by a group called Healthcare Access for Arkansans, and it was challenged by one, a patient rights advocacy group led by Martha Deaver, and that committee is called the Committee to Protect Arkansas Families. And it was also challenged by a committee formed by members of the Arkansas Bar Association, so basically lawyers in the state. What that proposal would have done was allow the legislature to set limits on the amounts awarded in medical liability cases, as you said. So But it had a provision stating that the limit would be $250,000. But this is, but the amendment only applied to what was called non-economic damages, which was what was written in the ballot title. Now, the Supreme Court said in their ruling that this non-economic damages, which had been described outside of the ballot title as pain and suffering, these things that are not so easily quantifiable, or, you know, when you sue like a nursing home, for instance, for pain and suffering, it's, you know, there, you know, there's not, you know, an easily quantifiable number to attach to it. And that the Supreme Court said this non-economic damages was not defined in the ballot title. And that's why they struck it down, or at least invalidated it. So no votes will be cast. All the ballots have actually been printed, so it will be on the ballot, but no votes will be counted on it. So, you know, there are a couple of statements. So I talked to, you know, as I mentioned, the Arkansas Bar Association opposed this. So this is Denise Hoggart. She's the president of the Arkansas Bar Association. And she is basically commenting here that, you know, this ballot title was indeed very confusing for voters.
They have a limited amount of time to go into the voting booth and make the decision one way or the other. And in reviewing that ballot title, they would not have had a fair and complete understanding of what they were being asked to do to change our Constitution. So we see it as something that was very important to the public.
Now, of course, you know, lawyers, you know, if that amendment would have passed, lawyers would likely have also, you know, gotten fewer rewards and or awards in you know, cases they represent in you know, medical lawsuits. Martha Deaver, as I mentioned, the director of the Committee to Protect Arkansas Families, reacted this way, saying, quote, "It would have created a one-size-fits-all style of justice in order to prevent corporate nursing homes from being held accountable when they abuse and neglect nursing home residents." And, you know, some nursing homes had contributed sizably to the campaign to get this amendment on the ballot. Let me read some parts of a statement from the sponsors of this amendment in reaction to the Supreme Court decision. This is from Healthcare Access for Arkansans. Dr. Stephen Cannon, who is one of the parties in the lawsuit. "It's clear that the people of Arkansas," is quote, "it's clear that the people of Arkansas wanted the chance to vote on the same reforms because of 130,000 signatures to get the amendment on the ballot." And he goes on, quote, "The same reforms that have been enacted across the United States, these reforms have led to more doctors and better health care at more affordable costs." And from Chase Duggar, the other member of this group, "Doctors and hospitals will continue working in fear of trial attorneys seeking to line their pockets with limitless medical malpractice lawsuits that drive up health care costs." So that's some initial reaction.
And worth noting, too, this follows, you had a big damage award issued many years ago by a nursing home owner, Michael Morton, because of violations. And he had been given an initial fine of $5 million. That was reduced by a judge to $1 million. And that was all linked to a big controversy that led to that judge stepping
Mike
aside.
Mike Maggio, who's been, you know, convicted in federal court, although he's appealing his sentence. There's some investigation, I think, still ongoing between, you know, the kind of communication or, you know, between Michael Morton and Maggio's campaign advisor or director when he was, you know, running for the appeals court seat. Gilbert Baker, who is a former state senator and who, you know, I think made the news a couple of weeks ago about, you know, being arrested and for drunken driving and in Faulkner County. But that's
and
beside
had meth in his system.
Yeah, although he wasn't charged for that.
Right.
But Yeah, certainly, you know, we hear about, you know, how, you know, nursing homes have, you know, have, quite a bit of influence among public officials here. You know, this, the name of Michael Morton gets thrown around a lot, and certainly he's been a contributor to a lot of campaigns for public officials around the state.
And finally, we should also, on the proposed constitutional amendment that would allow three casinos to be built in Arkansas, in Miller, Boone, and Washington counties. The court ordered election officials not to count any of those votes, said the ballot title does not honestly and accurately represent what is contained in the proposal. And earlier yesterday, we had a report come out that said more than $2 million had been spent on TV ads alone for this, and that's not to include mailers. I know, yeah. I've been getting a lot of direct mailers, even as late as yesterday evening, after having, you know, done this as a story yesterday. I go home and there's a mailer touting the benefits of these casinos in Arkansas.
I think I've gotten mailers from both sides of that, actually, too. That would have been an amendment to allow. So basically, that was sponsored by two people from Missouri, two business owners who wanted to set up casinos, as you said, Washington County up in the northwest corner of the state. They had a deal with the Cherokee Nation to operate that one, and, you know, Miller County down in southwest and Boone County up north. But yeah, the you know, a lot of people before this decision had, you know, kind of voiced concerns that basically the Arkansas Constitution would have written into it, you know, the names of these companies, which is kind of a really big rarity, and you know, hasn't been really done before, at least not that I know of.
Yeah, and the key opponents too, worth noting, are the owners of Oaklawn and Southlawn, the two tracks in the state that have the what they call electronic games of skill. That's pretty close to what they offer in casinos, so they have those slight little rules that keep it from technically being real blackjack or whatever.
The effort to defeat this certainly had a lot of funding from those groups. A lot of legislators came out in opposition to that, the gaming or this casino amendment, also in recent weeks. I think there are a couple of press conferences that we may have covered that, you know, highlighted that. But I even remember, you know, speaking about the opposition for once, I've seen a couple of full page ads or even like 2-page ads that with like a map of Arkansas with like the in the Democrat Gazette, purchased by this opposition group, with, you know, like pinpoints of showing all, you know, the geographical location of all the legislators who had opposed this. So it's kind of interesting. Certainly a well-funded effort on both sides.
Yes. Well, this week, a lot of attention has been paid as the demolition of the Broadway Bridge continues. And this was to be an especially dramatic week with the steel arch for the Broadway Bridge, connects Little Rock and North Little Rock, to be brought down with explosives on Tuesday morning. The explosion, smoke, it dissipates.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happens. It's still there. People keep waiting. Here's one of my favorite segments from a character on South Park.
So you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait. And you wait and you wait and you wait.
And they had to figure out what to do. Shortly after this, maybe about 45 minutes later, when it was clear the bridge wasn't going to come down, at that point I spoke with Danny Strasley, spokesman of the Arkansas Highway Department, who is paying the contractor that's actually doing this.
The contractor worked all weekend to pre-cut the structure, so to help it fall. They set off charges at 10 o'clock this morning, and the bridge is still standing. Now, right now, what is happening is there's an inspection barge in place. A member of the demolition crew is being hoisted in that yellow man basket that you see going up and down. They are taking an up-close look at the incision points to find out what worked, what didn't. They're coming up with a plan.
And that plan ended up being getting some towboats and strapping cables to the bridge. And it took several repeated efforts. They tried to pull the bridge down off the piers by the base of the span. That didn't work. Finally, I think it was the fourth, fifth, sixth time after strapping cables to the top of the bridge, they were able to bring it down about 3 o'clock that afternoon after the 10 a.m. explosion. And the way they did that, it caused the cleanup to be a little slower than expected. At this point now, we were scheduled to have an explosion of 3 of the original spans that come out of the water, the concrete spans. This steel span Tuesday, that had been added in the 1970s as part of the McClellan Kerr River Navigation Project that really opened up the Arkansas River to consistently be able to be used for barge traffic. So maybe that's part of why it was stronger than the rest of the bridge. We were to have a demolition of these concrete arches at 1 o'clock this afternoon on Friday. Now that's been pushed back to Saturday morning about 8 a.m. Again, you've got explosives that have been packed into this. And unlike what happened Tuesday, which was an implosion, this will be an explosion. Stuff is in the inside. We'll be blowing things to the outside.
But there's supposed to be like some kind of fabric or something to contain
to
the debris.
Contain it. But they've still got a much bigger safety zone than they did before just because of the potential. So they're not going to let people be over in the Dickie Stevens baseball park parking lot. They're having a bigger zone around it, but I bet we'll get a lot of people coming out to see that. I know there were a lot of people who did come out to watch the explosion Tuesday, and now having it on a Saturday, that'll probably be a big
out. All the people at the River Market, you know, getting on the Junction Bridge and stuff. Yeah, the thing I like about this story is that, you know, up until this point, I mean, I don't know how many times I've driven over the Broadway Bridge, but never really given it much thought until, you know, maybe the last couple of weeks, you know, I guess the significance of it. And this past week, you know, I don't know how many friends of mine on Facebook had like live, Facebook live, you know, camera shots of like the implosion that day. And, you know, since, you know, there was like a Twitter page for the Broadway Bridge that got started up, like a humorous one, and like a Facebook page, you know, and like there are all kinds of memes out there now. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of become a laughing point for a lot of citizens, I think.
Yeah, I liked all the, they started making jokes about, well, you need to get a coyote and a roadrunner out there. And and after the explosion doesn't move it, the coyote will jump on top of it. And, and NPR, this even was picked up nationally by NPR.
It's funny that, you know, the reason the bridge is being replaced is because it was deemed structurally deficient in the beginning. And now, you know, it's like, well, it must have been a lot stronger than we originally thought.
that was absolutely the kicker. Here's I'll just play this. I heard NPR mention it in their 601 newscast on Tuesday evening, and I called them up and I was like, yeah, you know, I've got the sound of the blast, and they were like, ooh, pass it along. So this is Jack Spear in a national network newscast, kind of having fun with the story.
One tough old bridge near Little Rock, Arkansas, the 93-year-old Broadway Bridge between Little Rock and North Little Rock, had been deemed structurally deficient. Crews placed explosives and set off their charges. And the old bridge declined to come down. Officials say while the bridge was weakened, nothing fell into the Arkansas River. In the end, they had to attach a cable to the section of bridge and pull it down.
So that wouldn't have gotten any national attention had you not had the explosion and then the bridge doesn't go anywhere. So, yeah. All right, we'll see what happens here. They hope to get the rest of the old bridge demolished, and they've got the spans being built there on the North Little Rock side. And you've got the six-month window. The contractor, if they can finish it early, will make $80,000 a day in a bonus for every day it's completed within that six-month time frame, or be penalized $80,000 a day for every day that it's late. So be interesting to see how that works out. Well, thanks for listening to KUAR's Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. If you're not already a subscriber of the podcast, you can do that on iTunes. We'll see you next week. Bye.